Get started here. I'll call to order the Thursday, February 17th, 2022 meeting of the Local Ethics Commission. It is 6:02 p.m. Calling the roll, Chair Daly.
Yes, here.
Commissioner Sinat.
Yes, here.
Commissioner Gnofo.
Yes.
Excellent. Here. All present. There is nobody else here at Village Hall. And there's nobody else in the line, so we do not have any citizen comment. And we could hear a motion on the approval of the meeting minutes from January 20th, 2022.
So moved.
I second. Any opposed? Or was all the any in favor, I should say?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Chair Daly, the next item in the agenda is old business, the continued discussion regarding the review of the ethics code.
Great. And I know you put this in the package. Could you share that combined one that we've been working on? And the first thing I really want to do is to thank every single person on this meeting for all of their assistance and time in getting this where we are. After going through all of the notes and both outside counsel's notes and the committee's notes, we are like almost done. We are so close to being there. And really there's just a couple of, I think, really small issues. And I think we can put this to bed today, one way or the other, at which point, it'll go up to the board for consideration. And we'll have completed the assignment that we've been asked to do. And this was something of a heavy lift when we got started. And so I want to thank everybody's time and consideration and their thoughtfulness and everything that they've contributed to this project, because we're basically at the finish line.
Thank you, Chair Daly. And in fact, I wanted to say thank you for allowing me to work with you, as well as the city attorney or the village attorney, as well as Greg Anofo. So thank you very much.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you.
So I can take some notes here too, but Greg Smith, if you would help me as well to do that, ultimately, I'll rely on you to help get the red line ready for the board. So I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely. I've got the version up and running. It's been an absolute pleasure working with the group. With John on this project. It's always fun to dust off a serious weighty ordinance, and you've done a great job of it to all of you. So, yeah.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan, for keeping us together as well. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody here has contributed, and I'm thrilled with the end result. I really am. So I think just from a process, I have a process question first, which is we've hung a couple of notes on the side, which I think we can kind of get through pretty quickly. And at the end of it, when we get to wherever the committee thinks we want to vote, we won't have sort of taken care of all of those notes. But I think what we can do is approve this pursuant to the notes. So for example, I know I have some nitpicky things here, like in the preamble, like put these in some sort of an order, put them in chronological order. They're not in chronological order right now, but we can say pursuant to that particular note, we approve it. Does that make sense as a way to move forward, John? And does that work?
Yep. Yep, it does. Okay. Since Greg's here, I'm deferring to him. He's nodding along as well. So I think good standing with that.
Absolutely. We see that, Chair Daly, a lot with the zoning groups where they're making recommendations to the board on land use matters, and they'll fashion language at the table and say that we're making our recommendation subject to the revisions as stated and agreed upon during the meeting. So John can help, kind of mark up the red line as we go. I'll do the same thing. And we'll make sure that the final document as recommended by the commission, if you get there tonight, is sent to you, Chair Daly, for your final look to make sure that John and I accurately reflects the conversation and consensus tonight.
Perfect. Okay, so I think the best thing to do is to just go through the notes and what we've got there and see see if we can move through this. There aren't very many, so I don't really anticipate that this is going to be a contentious or long call at all. The first one we have, Anastasia, is yours. This does not sound right, but I can't find the proper words. Do you?
I believe that the sentence was supposed to say that it's not supposed to exceed it's supposed to meet or exceed the ethics requirements imposed in state or federal law on village covered individuals and contractors. I think that would be a better formulation because I wasn't getting that when I first read it and when I read it like two or three times afterward. So I think if we reorganize that sentence so that it makes sure that the subject matter that we're trying to articulate as far as meeting the or exceeding the ethics requirements imposed in state or federal law on, does that make sense or no?
I personally, I think it reads well both ways. And okay. So I don't really have I'm happy to move it.
I was just thinking as a layperson and I'm reading that sounds too, it sounded too confusing for me. And yeah. So that understood. Was my initial comment.
I think putting the subject of the sentence at the end may read better. I'm thinking back to diagramming sentences in the eighth grade.
Right.
So we may be more grammatically correct that way. I've got your edits down here in the red line that I'm running.
Okay.
Expresses the same object just in a different way.
Okay. So we've got that taken care of.
Wonderful.
The next one was to just sort of put these in some sort of chronological order, you know, in some basis. So I think just the as they appear in the statute probably would make sense.
And Chair Daly, if I might, there were a couple of mentions of the Illinois code for other things. I would ask at this point, is that something that we should add to the A through H?
I think these are the codes. These are the specific ones.
Yes, but I think there was a reference to another code that did not make the A through H list. And so my question is, should we add it to this list before we complete it with the chronological order?
Well, I think if we've missed one, we probably should put it. If it's there's another one that's referenced within the four corners of this document, it probably should get put in there.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was the question. I just took a look and there are two mentioned in the draft ordinance that are not on the list. One is, it just slipped.
It's the Labor Relations Act.
Yes.
I don't think that the Labor Relations Act imposes ethics obligations, but there is the Illinois Lobbyist Registration Act, which should be added to the list. So we can make this a list that with one additional item and we'll sort them by where they appear in the statute books, meaning that 5 ILCS will come first and then we'll rank them down from there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, I apologize. I kind of made a mental note of it. And then when you highlighted it, it reminded me that I should ask that question. So thank you.
No, great catch. Let's move down.
You see these notes or no? Are they behind that for you?
Sorry, I have to move my.
There we go.
There you go. I may have kept some of these notes in, although I thought that the changes that you made a lot of sense, and I actually went back and looked through basically every one of them. So, well, that's fine. We can remove that note. This one. I guess the question is, do we want to, when we have, and it's not just this immediate family member, do we want to, within the text of the document, when we're using a defined term, capitalize the defined term throughout?
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. I just, we saw it was, and probably my mistyping on it. It was in some places there, in some places it wasn't. So,
My thought would be only that as you think about the subsequent reader of the document one day, when things are capitalized, it does signal to them that it is a defined term earlier in the code. I don't feel super strong like either way, but I don't think it's a bad idea to do that because it does aid in the reading of the document.
And I think if we're going to be consistent, we should be consistent throughout. Yeah.
Yeah. As long as we're one way or the other.
Right.
The most important thing is consistency.
Yes. Right?
And
because otherwise you don't have clarity. You have you know, vagary. So I guess I would leave it to council. What have you done in the past? I mean, in terms of consistency, we want to be consistent throughout this code to the others as well.
Yeah, this is a great question. I prefer capitalized terms be capitalized, because then you understand what you need to refer back to a definition to get the full meaning. However, the village's codifier, and this has been the case since I started working with River Forest over 10 years ago, the company that takes the village board ordinances and puts them in the code book online removes all capital from defined terms. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but if you read the village code, the only capitalized terms are proper nouns. They strip out everything else. So as a result, the village code is currently, it does not have capitalized definitions. Even if we put them in the ordinance, the codifier pulls them out. So I can go through and make this consistent without the use of defined or capitalization, except on proper nouns.
Okay. Well, there's no point in doing something that's going to get stripped out. So that's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, my only thing is that it be consistent.
Exactly. Yep. I agree. I think we're all on that page.
Okay.
All right. Then the next is just commentary. We can scooch down. Yeah, there was a, if you can see, this really, I deleted the spouse or no immediate family living with. That is an unnecessary, I thought, unnecessary limitation that you had to be living with, because the entire point of the gift ban is the immediate family members is already defined, whether you're meeting with or not, whether you're living with them or not. So that was why I deleted that. And that's much more consistent with the way that's been treated, that term has been treated throughout the document. Does everybody agree? Not agree?
I agree. I think that's great. I think that's a great amendment.
Makes sense to me. Yeah. And I can give you the legal background on this. The state law applies to spouses and family living with the officer. And so that's where the concept made its way into the ordinance, but the village can certainly increase the ethics requirements for gift ban, which is all that you're doing here. And I think it's a good change.
Okay, good. Then let's keep mine. My edit. Let's move forward. All right. What did we do? Was that,
No, I think that was my note.
That yours? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, just obviously, just like John participates in these meetings, if we limit it to village board members and commissioners, employees such as John who participate in these meetings wouldn't be bound by this. So I thought it made sense to just have it read village covered individuals, as there's no downside in expanding it.
And I agreed with you, which is why I put it in. So I made that change throughout. Does everybody else agree? We all good with that?
Yeah, I'm agreeing.
Okay, great. Then we can move forward. That's the two notes on that page. We're halfway through. Same, that's a mm-hmm. similar note. We keep going. Same thing.
Okay.
Okay, here's where the rubber hits the road. This is really the only, I think, area where we had, some form of disagreement between where we were at and what council was suggesting. And I have not sent around the note that you provided, Greg. So I think what makes sense is I'm going to give just the quick background here and where I came out on this, and then I'm going to give the mic over to Greg so that he can then take it from there, because he's got a different point of view, and that's where we're at. So there was in the original recommendations for council that there not be the ability for the committee to the ethics commission to investigate any anonymous complaints whatsoever, that that was just sort of not not possible. And my note here reflects, and I think everybody else agreed with me when we went through the notes, that probably was too too exclusive. My view has been, and I've worked in compliance for a very long time, that it is kind of the gold standard that you, in fact, are able to investigate anonymous complaints if they're well-founded and you have reason to believe that they have some validity. And that typically means that it's documented in some way, or there's some sort of factual support, and that you leave it to the discretion of the whoever's involved from in conducting the investigation to make that determination. And typically, if it's the fact that it is an anonymous complaint is taken into consideration in determining whether or not it has any credibility. And it's a negative consideration. If somebody does not have, you're not able to interview anybody and you have no one to talk to, that is a strike against finding that the complaints are credible. However, that's something that can be overcome with documentation and enough factual recitation that can be investigated. So that's why, that is the sort of the standard, the guidelines that I've worked with throughout my professional career. And so that is why I disagreed with the language that was proposed. I don't think we're really all that far apart, to be honest, because nobody wants to see witch hunts, and nobody wants to see unverifiable, hearsay claims that don't have any factual basis to be used to open up investigations. But the commission has to be given I think the commission needs to have the discretion to investigate factually documented anonymous complaints. That's where I'm at. So based on that, I made these corrections or edits, amendments to what was provided to us. And it put that in. And that's why I baked in this idea that they have to assess the validity of the written complaint. You don't just investigate everything. You have a basis on which to determine that there's reasonable basis for the complaint. And once you make that determination, you can then conduct an investigation pursuant to the rest of the terms of the code. So that's where I was at. John and I had that discussion. He related to Greg. And Greg, if you want to take it now, and we want to hear what your suggestions are.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a suggestion that's rooted in a process that was recently added to Illinois law with regard to anonymous complaints against police officers in particular. And one of the potential issues with the commission accepting anonymous complaints is that when you get a complaint and when you're reviewing it, that complaint will be listed on an agenda. The agenda and your deliberations and discussion about it would be conducted in the public potentially, including anonymous complaints, right? If someone wants to smear someone else, there's a concern that they may file a frivolous complaint with you, knowing that it'll end up on an agenda, and the stain on the target's reputation is immediate and in some ways indelible, right? If you're accused of doing something, even if you clear your name later, there's still the impacts of having been falsely accused that trail behind you. So the idea is that if you're going to accept anonymous complaints, which, that's a hurdle in and of itself, and I understand the group wants to be able to do that, the proposal is that the commission would keep anonymous complaints confidential, not list them on a public agenda, and would review them in executive session, which I do think there's an executive session for quasi-adjudicative bodies like yours that can hold hearings and make final decisions. Closed session. And if you determine that the anonymous complaint has sufficient objective verifiable evidence to support it, very similar to what Chair Daly was saying, right? Yeah. Then you would proceed with the complaint in the ordinary course, put it on the public agenda, start the process, issue notices, right? Get subpoenas or your requests out there and get going. But basically, you would have a private, confidential vetting of it so that you're not publicizing what could be a frivolous smear on someone. The process that I've described is generally what is provided for in the, it's called the Illinois Police and Community Relations Improvement Act. Previously, to complain about a police officer in Illinois, you had to sign your name to a sworn affidavit before you could do so. State law was amended as part of the reforms recently to allow you to go anonymously to the state licensing board for police officers, which then undertakes a confidential review of these anonymous complaints. And then if they find objective verifiable evidence, i.e. documentation, they can go ahead and trigger off their typical process for review and discipline on police officers. So that's that. That was my only substantive thought on this matter and on the edits to your ordinance.
Seen that language anywhere else? I mean, that's not language that I'm familiar with, like from the City Ethics Commission, the county, or the state. Is that police statute the only one that is a sort of an exemplar for that language?
Yeah, I don't have a survey of other, ethics ordinances that I can share where that's been used. I know that a number of inspector generals take anonymous complaints. Those are also staff driven, not public body driven processes, right? Where if you submit a complaint to an OIG in most units of government, it's not going to end up on an agenda immediately because staff has some discretion, right, to screen it and then toss it in the trash or bring it forward. But I can't give you another exemplar.
I can tell you that when I was running the county ethics, what that process that you described about going into executive session is exactly what we did when we were trying to determine the basis of and assess the validity of a written complaint. We would not act upon a complaint unless that complaint itself was assessed and determined to be credible. And we did those assessments in executive session. And I think the process makes sense. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that. I don't think we would want to limit anonymous complaints to remaining confidential. I think until they're shown to be verifiable, they should stay off the public agenda. I mean, the idea that Greg, that you just laid out, that somebody could try to smear somebody, you know, people are willing to do that with their own name anyway, you know, just anonymous or otherwise. So I think that would be the process we'd want to follow.
Yeah, I think I put some notes because I didn't want to forget what I was thinking about. But first, I agree that we should still allow the review of anonymous complaints. So let me go ahead and clarify that. Two, I have grammatical things that I'd like to add to this, Chair Daly. First, you removed an A from upon receipt of, and I think the A should be before a written complaint. So I'd like to add the A there.
B3,
the commission is authorized to act only upon receipt of written, and I would like to add the A written complaint. Do you see where I am?
Oh, yes, I do see that. Yes.
Okay, so I'd like to, right, it was struck out, but I'd like to add that. And then also it says in the second, I believe that's the second sentence, if I'm correctly reading it, upon receipt of a written charge, or you cut that out, upon receipt of a written complaint, the commission may, based upon its assessment of the validity of a written complaint, investigate, conduct hearings and deliberations, issue recommendations for disciplinary actions, impose fines in accordance with, and then so on. Here in this sentence, I believe something needs to be defined, and maybe validity might need to be defined, but I think what needs to be defined is what is needed to support a complaint for investigation for allegation purposes, because it's hard to verify evidence if it's not provided. If we're not going to have the ability to interview the person that's filing the charge, and I put in a little link, you know, of a blog that may or may not be helpful, but it goes into how one can investigate a fact-based complaint, also, you know, anonymous complaints with facts, anonymous complaints without actionable facts. So I think that review, just a footnote, kind of letting people know, what do you need to give us? If you're not going to give us your name, what do you need to give us for us to really do something about it? And then finally, the point that I'd like to make is, I'm not sure if there's an opportunity for us to dismiss, right? If there's an insufficient evidence in order to take any action on something that's not on the agenda, which I also agree with what Greg Smith and Commissioner Nofo said, but if there's not enough evidence, we have to be able to articulate to them that we're going to dismiss it because there's not enough evidence. And I think they should be aware. We just can't do anything because there's just not enough for us to do.
You're talking about where there is a written, where it is signed?
Yes. So on number three, it doesn't indicate that there is an opportunity. So it says purview to the appropriate attorney for prosecution. But I think there should be an additional sentence indicating that, you know, however, if there is not, it will be dismissed, right? As insufficient evidence.
Just simply saying that if the commission determines that a complaint is not valid, it shall be summarily dismissed.
Exactly. No, just a sentence like that. Just so people know.
Hold up, we got to be careful with this because you don't summarily dismiss something when you don't have enough evidence. You just don't open an investigation. Okay. And
yeah,
somebody
true.
Can come forward with an additional information. I mean, that's one of the problems with anonymous complaints. Mm-hmm. You don't have the ability to go back to somebody and say, you know, I see that you're saying there's ghost employees, but you haven't identified anybody or the dates or, you know, what have you. If you could come back with us with more information, we might be able to have enough to look into it. You can do that with somebody that has signed a complaint. You can't do that with an anonymous person. There's nobody to go back to. So I think the process is very, I mean, typically you assess what you have in front of you. And if it's an anonymous complaint, and you don't have enough to proceed. You don't proceed, period. You know, you don't even open up anything. And if you're doing that in executive session, what you may do is go into regular session and say, you know, you just have a motion that says, you know, the commission is not proceeding on any of the investigations that were identified in executive session, something like that. If you have a written and signed complaint and there's not enough there, that doesn't mean that you're dismissing anything. It's just meaning that you're not opening up an investigation, and you can go back. And oftentimes these people, if this is a written signed complaint, they may be showing up to your hearing, and it will be public. It's public if they choose to make it public. Somebody can show up to our meeting and say, what's going on with the complaint that I had about this contractor? Mm-hmm. And at which point it is a public investigation, or it's a public matter that we either choose to investigate or not. So I think
Chair Daly, if I can add that in
absolutely.
Some of the discrimination cases that I work, you know, that I do on my job, they have a whole section on how you can dismiss allegations. And I put in the sentence, we might just need to add a section that explains that allegations can be dismissed during the evaluation stage of the case, or the, you know, written charge processing, or after the allegations have been opened for investigation, and kind of outline for them what are the different reasons why we would do that. That might need to be something that we add if we're not going to add the sentence that Commissioner Ignofo had mentioned.
Now, I tend to think that we don't want to overwrite this, and we want to be able to have some ability to have some discretion. You know, if you don't tick every single box on all of these rules, then you get into trouble here. I mean, I think this as it's set forth says, mm-hmm. hey, if you want it has to be in writing. Mm-hmm. The commission has to assess the validity of the complaint, and in that assessment has to make a determination that there's you know, that it's potentially valid, at which point they may choose to do the following, you know, some of which, not all of which, right? Investigate, conduct hearings, deliberate, issue recommendations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They may choose not to do any of those things, right? We may choose if there's a, an investigation at the end. I think you're right. You may, we probably do need a sentence in there that says that, you know, they, we also may choose, you know, at the end of such investigative period, they may either make recommendations or choose not to further investigate or have a finding of some kind of finding that it's not, doesn't rise to the level of a requiring that kind of recommendation. I mean, the recommendation can be, we don't, we recommend that nothing be done. We don't think there's anything here after we've investigated. That's not baked in here. And that's probably what we need.
Yeah, so I added another sentence. The allegation on its face or as clarified fails to state a violation of one of the laws or regulations that we enforce. You know, maybe that could be the sentence. I mean, we can go deeper.
What do you think here? I'd like to hear what you think.
Greg?
Yeah, which Greg are you talking to?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry. That's me. That's my, counsel. Well, everybody's a counsel.
Everybody's an attorney.
Keep going, right? The guy with the beard or the one without the beard?
Yeah. There we go.
Counsel Smith. I think she's going for Counsel Smith.
Counsel Smith. How about that?
Great. I think these ideas are all good. You know, the ordinance in Section C below has a process whereby when you receive a complaint, you have to, as long as it doesn't, well, there's a criminal referral process, and then the commission gives notice to the target and then holds a meeting to determine validity, right? And the question here is whether or not we introduce a prefatory step to all that. Like, do you even want to give notice to targets if you get an anonymous complaint before your group has looked at it and determined whether it even gets past the threshold, right? And so I think that some of these concepts that you're talking about are good ones to add an initial screening for certain complaints.
And I think your idea where you talk about executive session makes a lot of sense, because and it's absolutely appropriate, because you don't want to be getting into hurting people's reputations, having an on the record on, you know, public discussion of what may be completely invalid allegations. So maybe we put some sort of reference in there, you know, that the assessment of complaints may be determined in an executive session prior to blah, 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 blah. And I think that gets to the concern that you had and is very much consistent with all of the practice that I've seen in the past.
Okay. And I feel like, Chair Daly, that in organizations with more resources, you probably have staff involved in some of this vetting up front. Where like you have an appointed inspector general who has some authority to kind of triage things. Here we have the commission. So you're going to be doing all this work yourselves. This is just a very basic triage step before you decide, do we then engage the formal process, which involves a further step of vetting before setting it for a hearing.
I think that makes great sense. I think that covers everybody's concerns well.
Okay.
And Greg Smith, do you think that the signed complaints can fit that under the executive session allowances too?
I do. I think in, you know, let me pull up the Open Meetings Act exception real quick.
They're probably subject to FOIA, but that doesn't mean that the discussion that the commission has about whether or not to proceed with the investigation couldn't be part of executive session. That was always in executive session. Yeah. And then all of the investigation was in executive session. It was only when we ruled on a particular investigation that was open that we then went into public, into the public part of the meeting.
Now, I put in the chat that when I was articulating that we might need to add a section that explains the allegations can be dismissed during the evaluation stage. I also added maybe about 1, 2, 3 different ways that we can add if if you have time. The allegation on its face or as clarified fails to state a violation of one of the laws or regulations, right? And that would be like subsection A of 3. The allegation on its face or as clarified lacks sufficient factual detail. Example, who, what, where, when, how, or so speculative, conclusory, or incoherent that the commission cannot infer that a violation may have occurred or may be occurring. That would be like subsection B. And then the subsection C could be based on all of the facts and information provided by the complainant or publicly available information, the commission cannot reasonably conclude that a violation has occurred. I think if we add something like that, we would be able to give the executive session an opportunity to say under subsection 3A1, that's why we're dismissing this anonymous complaint, or 3A2. Does that make sense? Does everyone understand what I'm saying?
I understand exactly what you're saying.
Is that too much, or?
I mean, I don't know if it's.
We have to give them a way in order to articulate why is it that we're not continuing with this anonymous complaint. The person who's not giving us their name is not giving us an opportunity in order to communicate with them in order to secure additional information. Therefore, they should know why we've had to dismiss the complaint. You know, A, you just didn't give us enough. B, you know, there's not enough. Based on the facts that you gave us, it wasn't enough. Or C, you know, it just doesn't state a violation. Like, I think those are good 3 reasons to get rid of the complaint on an anonymous basis without having to require the person to identify themselves.
Yeah, I think those are good concepts. I don't want to overwrite this. And I think maybe what we want to do is to leave it to Council Smith to give a new version of this and come back to us, because you're hearing what we're saying. I think we're all on the same page. We need to have a little bit more process written into this to deal with the executive session part of this, which I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, that deals with a lot of the concerns that you were raising. Also the basis upon which and what happens when you decide not to move forward and when you should reasonably be able to do that. I think some of the language that Anastasia gave is very helpful. But I also don't want to put so much in there that we kind of have too much of a burden of the language to not have enough discretion to do what we're going to do.
Yeah, I'm not trying to overwrite it, but that's why I kind of wrote it in the chat so that it would be easier to, right, you know, so you wouldn't have to think about it too much. You know, we kind of just put some of those things in there. And I added another one because I was thinking about it. And I was like, the commission obtained credible information indicating that the allegations raised by the complaint are currently resolved. That would be another, you know.
The language he's provided is very, very helpful, like extremely helpful.
Okay.
So I just think we can get there. Council Smith can provide us with that.
This has been extraordinarily helpful conversation. I've grabbed all of the concepts, both that have been spoken and that Commissioner Sinat put in the chat, and I've got a good idea on how I will add this into the draft ordinance. I think the group should come back and take a look at it, because I don't think we're going to be able to craft something on the fly that you would be comfortable voting on. It's too much.
Make sense is if you can send it around to us, or is this something we have to do as a meeting, with notice kind of meeting?
Or can we do a share document thing?
Well,
Open Meetings Act is.
Yeah, I think Open Meetings Act is, it would prefer that you get back together at some point and vote on the recommendation instead of just deliberating on it outside of the open meeting. So you can certainly give input, and John can be the hub and you're all the spokes, you know, giving him input, and then he can deliver a final document that you can meet if you're all happy with it, vote, and 10-15 minute meeting to wrap it up.
I think let's do that then, if that's, because I think you're right. This is going to take some wordsmithing to get where we want to be. I'm sure you'll get there, and we'll probably say great, but the law requires us to say great with notice and voting and all those other things. So I get you. So we're going to have one more quick meeting, I think. Is there, do you want to scroll down? That may be the end of it. Oh, no. Let's see. Changed per note. So that was, Greg, probably your note?
Yeah, so basically it was kind of unclear to me what we were entitled or what we had the power to compel. So I just kind of put it forth and I thought was just pretty plain language, specifically what we would be able to do relative to our discovery phase in any investigation.
I thought it was well written. I put it in, changed it. Are we, is everybody good with that?
Yep, looks good to me.
Okay. Let's see, we can skip my note. That was just probably a note to me as I was writing this. The changes here were simply because, and this is everything I think on the rest of this page, is the term of art in here, written charge, what required it not to be anonymous. So I got rid of that term of art and just called it the complaint. So that may be another area, Council Smith, where you might want to go back and put, you know, undo what I did. If we've got, we get a written charge definition that we all like, but that was why I changed it, because as written, it required that it had to be signed.
Understood. I'll consider that as I blend in that prior conversation.
Exactly.
Well, what I'm going to send is what I've been using, within my own particular job, where I've gotten mm-hmm. most of this language from, which is the case processing manual. And it has a whole bunch of language on that they use in order to dismiss particular allegations. So I'm gonna just go ahead and send that to you all. So maybe, Jonathan, I don't have Council Smith's email, I don't believe, or do I?
He's probably on the last invite for tonight, but otherwise, if you wanna just include me, I'll make sure to forward it to Greg.
Okay, all right. There you go. So yep. I just want to make sure that you all know where I'm getting it from. I'm smart, but not that smart. You know what I mean? I want you to know that this is where I've gotten some of the language, and I think that we can use some of this language in order to improve how possibly we can take in an anonymous complaint and yet handle it in a professional manner if we cannot move forward without having communication with the complainant.
And the guidelines make a lot of sense. If we actually did this in real life,
right?
You probably would have a process manual, and those things in the process manuals have a lot more detail in them than the law, the codification of the enabling legislation. Right. So that makes sense. I don't know whether we need to go through and have a guidelines, given the the lack of activity in this particular area, but I think the language is useful.
Okay, I went ahead and I sent that out to you all.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
I have some school district clients that would love to read this.
Yeah. Sorry, Council Smith. I just want to make sure that if someone submits something, that if we decide that it's not good enough to investigate fully, that they have knowledge as to why we felt that way.
Thank you.
Peggy, one of the notes you had just above there is, I raised the question, I don't know if it's normal in these types of documents, but should we be considering a double jeopardy section such that if a complaint is raised and investigated and then, there's a finding that there was no violation, is that an adjudication, a final adjudication of it, or can that complaint just be re-raised again under a subsequent administration? I mean, I'm not sure what other codes do, but it certainly seems to me that's something we want to give some consideration to.
Yeah, Council Smith, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a good idea to throw in to set a tone. I don't know if the constitutional prohibition on double jeopardy extends to
non-criminal
penalties, though it would be you'd be hard pressed to have a finding of not liable and then liable in on appeal, have the liable upheld, right? I'm just thinking as the village attorney how I would try to do that. But if you want to set a tone, you could certainly, you know, add such language is a self-imposed requirement.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I wasn't thinking of it in a constitutional section, you know, approach. It was more of, does this committee want to be in the position where it is just reinvestigating repeat complaints that it's already made findings on?
Yeah, I think that in the information that I submitted to you, Council Smith, it would address what Greg is talking about, Commissioner Inofo. Basically, if it's same or similar facts that have already been raised and it's already been investigated or we're currently investigating the same or similar facts, that might be another reason why we would, quote unquote, dismiss the complaint.
Exactly.
Got it. Exactly.
When you look at that section 108 from the CPM that I provided to you all, I think there's some really great language that we can use, you know, for the commission in order to clarify why we're not going to do certain things. And and I think it will avoid the double jeopardy question, right?
And a lot of these complaints, when the ones that we've investigated at the county level, if you're looking at campaign finance or things like that, they're ongoing complaints. So mm-hmm. you may have investigated something that occurred up to, you know, January 1 of year 2, but they continue to do it. So you don't want to be putting yourself in a position where you can't reinvestigate. It's not really reinvestigate, but investigate ongoing violations if mm-hmm. there's already been a determination prior to that. But your point's well taken. But I just think it goes into the discretion of the commission. And you're absolutely right. If it's already been investigated, that should be the answer in terms of determining whether there's validity to it. We've already done everything we're supposed to do. We've investigated it. We're done.
Right. We don't want to continue to do the same thing for same or similar facts.
That's exactly right. All right.
Yeah, so when you guys open up the CPM and you look at that section 108, I would do a control F, by the way, because it's a pretty big document, in order to get to type in section 108, and it'll get you to that section so that you could read the alphabet that they have, A through O, I believe, and maybe find some good language, like I said, that would be helpful to us.
Great. I think we can scroll down to the next page. Those are all, I think, from that same issue of the written charge complaint. That's all that is.
Wonderful.
So we're through it.
Yeah, so other than that, I'm sorry, Peggy, I didn't mean to add more work.
You didn't add more work. We're just getting to the right place. And we're all down to just that one section, which I am confident Council Smith will be able to get us language that everybody's going to be happy with. And we'll get us all to the same, in the right, you know, be in the right, you know, in the same lane. So I'm sure that'll work out great. So when, if we've got everybody here, maybe we can set another meeting.
I'm not available on Thursdays beginning in March. I'm actually teaching an immigration law class for Roosevelt University. So Thursdays are no longer available for me.
We're talking about a 15-minute meeting, probably at most, because that language will be circulated mm-hmm. already.
Okay.
So it shouldn't be long. I'm super flexible. Next week is great. The week after that is bad because I'm in San Francisco.
Greg, how much time do you need to deliver on it?
Sorry, I would prefer if we could meet the week of the 28th or the 7th just to give me some time to thoughtfully put this together and then also produce the final version of the ordinance for your review with the other minor changes in it.
Yeah, let's do the 7th because I'm completely all over the place that first week in the week of the 28th.
Okay,
my classes don't begin until the 15th, so I'm still available on the 10th if you guys are cool with Thursday at 6.
It works for me.
Yeah, I've got a conflict on the 10th. Is it possible to do the 9th, the Wednesday?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. I've got concert tickets.
The 6th?
Yeah.
I mean, the 9th at 6?
No, the 9th.
Yeah. The 9th at 6 p.m.
Yeah, Wednesday the 9th at 6 p.m.
Okay. And then we can post on Monday still, right? That gives you enough time?
Yeah, we can post by Monday at 6. Well, it'll give us enough time. Greg will get this out in advance of that. And, you know, hopefully we'll even get that taken care of by the 4th, be ready to roll for it.
Yep, great.
Yeah, I'm not going to delay in getting the ordinance done. I just want to give it a couple more read-throughs to make sure that I captured all the capitalization, typographical things. You know, I'll give a very tight read and deliver you a final red line.
That's perfect. That totally makes sense.
So Wednesday, March 9th, I'm available too. I just wanted to, I'm excited. We're almost done.
All right, terrific. We need a motion to
we'll give you a motion.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Greg, a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. We are adjourned.